Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So tragedy struck today. A worker at John Deere was heading to the picket line and was struck on the highway and killed at the Parts Distribution Center there in Milan, Illinois. And, you know, this is one of those things where you go, just heartbreaking, but avoidable. This strike didn't have to happen. If the employer were to come to the table and negotiate and address some of the concerns, maybe we wouldn't be in this position. But sadly, this person at 6 a.m. this morning lost their life on the highway just trying to get to the picket line and join his fellow workers. And it's heartbreaking. But here's the thing. The fight and the battle goes on. And I wish the best for the folks there. But John Deere is one of those places. 10,000 workers across the country have said, you know what, we're going to close this two-tier wage system one way or another. And they've taken to the picket line to do it. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on there, because he was at their big rally on Saturday. I've asked J.D. Schulten to come talk with us. J.D. is the executive director of ruralvote.org, obviously their website, ruralvote.org. J.D., thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, pleasure being back, and my heart goes out to that worker and his family, and it just, exactly. It was avoidable, and what we see happening across, a lot of it's happening here in the Midwest and in Iowa, on the other side of the state, but still, there's something happening out there, and I'm eager to talk about that today.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things, JD, where, you know, we're starting to see people who are kind of saying, hey, I've had enough of what's happening. And there's a lot of anger. And look, I look at Trump being elected as a sign of anger, of a working class that their issues have not been addressed for so long. And they're looking for something, anything. I say this all the time. A drowning man will grab onto an anchor because he thinks it might save him. And it's not going to. But you grab onto what's there. And this is where I think Democrats have an opportunity. And labor is that place. You know, I say it all the time. On election night in 2020, I began leading a strike of 55 striking workers here in our area. Fight all you want. The righteous fight is for better wages, hours, conditions.
Amen. And I think you're exactly right. I think so many people were deemed essential during COVID, and yet they're not getting paid what they deserve. There's two sides to this. You got the worker side. You also have and you look back 100 years ago when we had the first kind of huge wave of the labor movement, you also had the other part of it that was the antitrust side. And so, like, when you have corporations like John Deere, who they sell twice as much equipment than their next two competitors combined, that part of market power, they can just store money offshore. They can just, they do all these things. They get money from the state of Iowa. They get about $16 billion a year from the state of Iowa. And it's one of those things where, do they use that money to go back to the workers? No, they use it. Since 2010, they spent $16 million lobbying Congress. And so it's just, all this stuff adds up and it's boiling over. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. Especially here in Iowa.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because, I say we are reliving the last 100 years, and sadly my children are going to have to fight the battles of their grandparents and their great grandparents because we're back kind of in that robber baron era. Inequality in this country has never been greater than it is right now. Fortunately, we have some social safety net programs that dull the edges of that pain, but we're still more equal than we've ever been in this country, JD.
We are living in the second gilded age, and that is clear as day. What we're seeing with the technology and Facebook and all that stuff, it goes over into this. In agriculture, every sector of agriculture, every sector, whether you're on the input side and seed and fertilizer, whether you're on the market side with processing, in the processing plants, every sector has monopolies, multinational corporations that are dictating what's happening on the farm. But it goes beyond that. It's the wealth that is getting taken out of our rural communities. Where I'm from, we haven't bounced back since the 2008 economic crisis. And that's the big thing. When we had the caucus here in Iowa and all the presidential candidates coming through, that's the point that I wanted to make sure everyone understood was like, okay, I know the economy is boosting for like Des Moines and Chicago, Minneapolis, like the bigger cities. There's a lot of thriving going on there economically, but that's not everywhere. And it is definitely becoming a difference between the have and the have nots when it comes to the economy.
No, and it's still that fight between the rural and the urbans. I get this all the time. And sadly, rural communities have been left behind by a lot of policy, especially when the factory goes away. Or, last week we had David Pepper, the former chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party, on. And he had gone to a town in Ohio where the factory left and the town is abandoned. A quarter of the population it once was. Now it's got all of the negative opioid addiction problems, broken families, all of the stuff, alcoholism, all of the things that you expect once the main employer goes away and no policy to replace it. And the worst part yet, a representative who, when the citizens went to and said, hey, what are you going to do to help us? Basically told them, well, actually told them to move. I mean, it's crazy where we are.
And we're seeing that across. Like, there was a study done in Minnesota, but it relates to here to Iowa too, that in 5 years, a small town won't even have a local grocery store. Dollar Generals are coming here. Their workers get paid $8-$9 an hour in dangerous conditions because there's only one or two people on staff at a time. That's been well documented. And they don't sell fresh meat or fresh produce. And it's just, what are we doing in this society? Like, where I'm from is the second most agriculture producing district in America. And we only have 2 farm to table restaurants. We have 90% of the food that we consume in the state of Iowa is imported. And so you wonder, like, who are we doing this for? And meanwhile, multinational corporations have come here and just sucked the wealth out of these communities. And to me, I mean, that's why I decided to run for Congress back in 2018. And to do something about it. I got to a point where you come back and you see these small towns that are just shells of what they used to be. And then when you have food insecurity and you have unhealthy food, and then you have these addictions that kind of come with all of that and this despair, it's definitely a tale of the haves and the have not in this country. And that's what I'm really focused on.
And this is why, I talk about politics so much. People, I don't want to talk about politics. No, the political arena is how we got into this mess. And it's how I think we have to get out of it. We need to elect people who understand what you said. We need the next Teddy Roosevelt. We need the next trust buster. We need the next Franklin Roosevelt to bring in policies that are going to help average everyday working people. We've got 2 parties, and I'm sorry to say this, but we've got 1 party solidly in the pocket of corporate America, and a pretty good portion of the other one in their pocket as well. Corporate America gets what they want. We're seeing this playing out every day, and I think the average worker gets that. Where's the way forward? Who's going to help us move to some bit of sanity in this day?
That's one thing that during the bringing it back to the caucus and pushing all these presidential candidates to talk about these very direct issues, these kitchen table topics, and just like showing what's happening, the reality of what's happening in this economy. I really appreciate when Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, mentioned, like, if you could pass one bill, what would it be? It's campaign finance reform. And because that dictates everything. If you got money out of politics, then all these corporations couldn't have their influence over it. And one thing that I'm the executive director for ruralvote.org, but my other project I work at, I'm a senior advisor for the American Economic Liberties Project, which is an antitrust think tank out of DC. And the thing that I'm so proud of working with them is that is where the fight is at right now. It is just balancing the level. I mean, we talk about, not only is this an economic issue, this is about our democracy. You look at the history of this country, and the Boston Tea Party was a rejection of the monopoly that was the East India Trading Company.
Right.
We had the battle when the workers were fighting to get organized 100 years ago. We had the same battle when it comes to antitrust. And you look at when we all like to talk about the middle class in the 50s and 60s. Well, that was strong unions, and it was enforcing our antitrust laws. And we've had 4 decades of consolidation. And I mean, say what you want about President Biden, but like one of the things that I am so proud that he has taken on, he's the first president in my lifetime that has talked about the competition in our economy. And he had an executive order on this, which is one of the biggest game changers. Now, is that going to solve everything? No. But when we enforce our antitrust laws, that's the first step in the right direction in so many of these issues, and workers' rights is at the top.
No, I'm right there with you. And look, you know, we're so busy fighting over the nonsense issues that we lose these big, and this is exactly where, honestly, where the wealthy in corporate America wants us. They want us eating each other and fighting each other. As Jay Gould said, he could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half. That's going on, and nobody's getting paid because we're doing it anyway. For me, this is where the organizing has to happen. So, you know, as you're out talking to people, you know, across the political spectrum, do they get this, or are we still, when you talk about this, are we still in our camps?
So I think both. So when I went out and for the last 4 years, I ran for Congress back to back times in 2018 and 2020, I talked about antitrust nonstop. And I had farmers and workers who would never vote for me and ones who would always vote for me and everywhere in between. And when I talked about antitrust, I never got pushed back on because they know I'm right. And I think it's something that does cross party lines because it's not just a black-white issue.
Right.
But that being said, what we often, and you mentioned this, we tend to get brought up cultural issues. And the thing, when I got presented cultural issues, I said, you know, this is something that's meant to divide us. But at the end of the day, it's not left versus right. It's so much it's up versus down. And so much of the Republican side looks at down and saying the people below you are the people that are a problem in this country. And when in reality, it's the people above you making all the decision and all the money. Right. That's dictating what's happening.
No, and I look at this Build Back Better plan. There is nothing in this plan that is horribly liberal, left, far, extreme socialist. There's none of that. There's getting granny some glasses. There's paying for early childhood education so kids get an opportunity to get a head start. There was, you know, 2 years of additional schooling at the end of high school, which I think in this moment with the technological advances in the world we live in is an imperative. We have to have it. There's all kinds of stuff in there for the social safety net that has been tattered for the last 40 years and is wildly popular, which is why we're not going to get any of it.
that's you're exactly right. All these policies, when it just comes to policies, the Democratic Party is on the right side of these things at like 70% a lot of these things, and if we pass this and even just a shell of what it is, but I hope they don't, that'd just be crushing. But like if they do pass this, this is going to be one of the largest investments in rural America that we've seen since the New Deal. And I can't express what type of game-changing opportunities this is. Will this be immediate? Probably not, but the opportunity for what can happen is going to be pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, well, especially on the broadband access level. I mean, just that alone is something we desperately need, and it's remarkable that we haven't gotten to this point. So the question then comes, what you do as executive director of ruralvote.org is get people who are going to run for office in rural areas, kind of like where I live in a very rural red area. This is a 65-35 area. Republicans dominate. You know, but I think you have to fight in these districts. I think you have to talk about all of the issues that we've been talking about. Because, look, even Republicans come along, like you said, on antitrust, on the massive corporate power and then the monopolies that we're seeing. I think you have to fight those fights.
Oh, absolutely. And so that's actually one thing, a great segue is on November 6th, ruralvote.org is hosting a national rural strategy session. So we have grassroots groups from across the nation who are looking to improve democratic performance. And like what I get frustrated in the Democratic Party is they look at a place like your area and where I live and they're like, oh, we can't win there. We're not going to invest money in there. But when we look about how are we going to win the Senate? You know, everyone talks about Manchin and Sinema, but like if we had enough senators there, we wouldn't have to worry about them. And that's the reality. And the Democratic Party does not understand the skew and the biasness of the rural vote. And so that's one thing that we're trying to do is really push that.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Iowa. Iowa used to be a solidly Democratic state. Tom Harkin was, you know, was an incredible labor senator, one of the, you know, one of the best people I ever met and had the chance to interview. And we've lost that guy.
Exactly. He an absolute hero of mine. And yeah, that's exactly right. We went from this proudly purple state to this ruby red state. And I like to tell folks that we are geographically between Wisconsin and South Dakota, and politically we're about the same. And I think this election cycle, this 2022, is really going to show which way we're going to go.
So nuts and bolts of it. If someone wants to run in one of these areas, because it is an uphill climb, right. What advice do you first give them?
The first thing I would do is make sure that you're not alone in this, because that's, I think a lot of candidates are pretty gung-ho. Running for federal office is a complete grind, but the first thing I do, what I did was I had a vision. I had certain dates and just made a timeline of, okay, I want to make sure I talk to this many people, travel this many, to this many communities, and raise this much money initially. And I think when you have a timeline like that right away, it really puts you on a trajectory of, okay, can I make this or can I not? And in 2018, we went from absolutely nothing to moving the needle 24 points, which was the third most in the nation. And
wow. Good on you. Yeah. Why didn't you run again?
I did. And then Representative Steve King lost his primary and the Trump wave, and it just, in 2020, it didn't work out in our favor.
No, that's all excellent advice. And of course, you know, go to ruralvote.org. Plenty of resources for candidates and folks to get involved. And also the main piece of advice that I always give people who are going to run in this area is you better find some thick skin.
You know what? Go and talk to everybody. Yep. The majority of people are willing to listen. There's definitely a passionate people that will never, ever vote for you. And you know what? Don't waste your time with them. Go and talk to people, change the world. More people agree with you than you'd think.
There you go. J.D. Shelton, I appreciate the time. Executive Director of RuralVote.org. Make sure you check out that website. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. J.D., thanks so much. I appreciate it.
It's an honor to be back.
Good stuff. I'd love to have him on. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.